What is up, everybody? Welcome into week 12 of the PFF NFL betting show. I am here with Judah Forkang, as always. Judah, how's it going, man? How's your week 11?
Solid week 11. Not as solid as a beautiful Lions SGP that you carved out. Talked about it on this pod. Love to see a big hit. So congrats there. Just churning along. In some ways, I feel like it is somehow crazy that it is already week 12, but also I was in this mindset like week 8, and it feels like it's been week 13 for 5 weeks. We still have plenty of football left. We got Thanksgiving games next week. Really excited to get into this part of the season.
Yeah, Thanksgiving feels like a kind of milestone where you hit the home stretch a little bit. But yeah, it was an interesting week 11 for me. From like a win-loss perspective, it was my worst week of the season. But from a profit perspective, it was my best week of the season because I hit the 130-1 SGP, just kind of riding that Lions. The Jaguars had nothing to stop the Lions. That my SGP was kind of built around like the volume's going to go to everyone besides Amon-Ra, and then Amon-Ra crushed, Jameson crushed, Gibbs crushed, everyone crushed.
When you score 52 points, yeah, it's wild.
Yeah, so hopefully we can hit another one here this week through some of these angles we're talking about. And I wanted to start with Thursday Night Football. It's a divisional game, AFC North game. Steelers traveling to Cleveland as 3.5-point favorites. 36.5-point total. And we saw kind of last week the Steelers-Ravens game. It was classic, ugly. Steelers win without scoring a touchdown, AFC North game. Vegas is kind of implying similar thing is going to happen this week against Cleveland. When I was just kind of doing research for this game, I think the Steelers' passing attack is in a good spot just based on the matchup. If you look at Cleveland, these two teams are the two biggest single high safety teams in the NFL. If you look at middle of the field close, which is just single high safety, Pittsburgh's first in the NFL, Cleveland's second in the NFL at 70%. And Wilson has pretty big splits when he sees single high compared to two high this season. Granted, it's a four-game sample, whatever it is, pretty small sample. But he has an 80 passing grade, 9.3 yards per attempt, 109.4 passer rating against single high. Against two high, that drops to 53.2 passing grade, 5.6 yards per attempt, 72.4 rating. So he's had more success when he gets those single high looks. And that makes sense with what we talked about last week. All of his success has come on these deep throws down the sideline, and you get more of those opportunities against single high. Against the Cleveland team, where coming into the year, we would have said, like, this is one of the best cornerback groups in the NFL. Denzel Ward, Martin Emerson, Greg Newsome in the slot. Martin Emerson's really struggled this year in terms of grading for us, in terms of the separation grading too, kind of both types. Denzel Ward has been hurt. He's still a good player, but it has not quite been the elite player on that other side. So I think there's going to be opportunities for Pickens specifically, for Calvin Austin. It seems like they're going to bring Mike Williams on very slowly. He only caught that touchdown in the Washington game because Calvin Austin had to come out for a play. So I think I'm mainly on Pickens and Wilson. And the lines, when you look at them, Wilson's line is 186.5. Pickens' line is 58.5, and that just feels too low. And granted, I kind of did this research before I looked at the weather forecast, and it looks like it's going to be disgusting, primarily rain. But I still think they're too low. Maybe I don't go as crazy on the alts with it, but like the overs, I still think are good plays here.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I'm just laughing at, classic Steelers that Mike Williams is in by accident and catches the game-winning 40-yard touchdown. But, I'm totally with you on the angles. And I think even if we just, like, talk about Russell Wilson's passing prop was it was, like, 215, I think, last week. Maybe it was slightly lower against the a Ravens defense, which is bad, but the Cleveland defense, as you said, I think plays a lot more into his strengths. Also, I'm not a meteorologist. I don't want to kind of speculate too much on weather, and the market usually does a pretty good job, especially in the short term. But there are a lot of reports early this week we're going to have 30 mile per hour winds, a nasty kind of rain and snow mix. And what we do see about production, especially in the passing game, is that rain, when it's like a real torrential downpour, matters a lot. But if it's kind of stuff that's relatively light or snow, it doesn't impact the game as much as some of the stronger wind gusts when you're talking about 30 mile per hour winds, 25 mile per hour winds, which really affect deep passes. And this one, from what I see, is something closer to like 10, which is not that bad. How heavy the rain is, I'm not sure, but even still, I think there is some value here, especially if the weather is not kind of this crazy monsoon / snowstorm, which I don't think it will be. These props are just too low, and like I've been selling on Russell Wilson. We talked about it last week, but for all the reasons you mentioned, this is kind of the perfect setup. And this Cleveland team that's allowing the highest, it's not just the single high structure, it is like teams are attacking them deep more than anyone in the NFL. Over the past 5-6 weeks, they've allowed more explosive plays than anyone else in the passing game. This is the spot, and I think there's going to be some regression for Russell Wilson, but I'm not sure this is the area.
Yeah, and the thing that scares me is the Wilson taking sacks and Wilson's escapability under pressure against a good pass rush. I do think the Cleveland pass rush did take a hit when they traded away Za'Darius Smith. They had a 13% quick pressure rate against New Orleans, which is pretty low, and New Orleans does do some stuff that kind of helps mitigate that. But I do think this is a worse version of this pass rush than what we saw early in the season, because you trade away Za'Darius Smith. Pittsburgh's going to they're already a heavy personnel team. They play with a bunch of tight ends. They're going to give help against Myles Garrett and try to force someone else to beat them, the same way Cleveland's going to do with TJ Watt on the other side. So I don't hate looking at some of these Cleveland sack props, where you can find them depending on what the odds are. I haven't seen those yet, but something I will look at today before the game. The last thing I had here was I think you saw Baltimore wasn't really able to get a ton going in the run game. The Steelers have been one of the most difficult teams to run against all season. I was on Nick Chubb last week. That did not work out. New Orleans just got out to a big lead behind Taysom Hill, dropping 45 fantasy points. And the Browns just weren't able to get anything going on the ground. So I kind of doubt they're going to be able to in this spot. And I saw Jameis Winston, his pass attempts prop is 33.5. He's gone over 40 in each of the last 3 weeks. Like, in this spot, against the defense that is difficult to run against, I think you see a high-volume Winston game, and that's probably going to create I kind of doubt it's going to go well, right? Because you look at how Winston plays. He pushes the ball downfield more than almost any quarterback in the league. Second highest percentage of his passes past the sticks, behind only Anthony Richardson. And regardless of what metric you want to look at, the Steelers have been one of the best defenses in the NFL at defending those throws past the sticks. They're fourth in success rate, second in EPA per play. They create turnovers. They're tied for third in interceptions on those plays, third in completion rate allowed. Like, this is going to be a high volume game, and maybe Jameis hits. He's certainly one of the more hot and cold players in the league. But I think there's a good chance we see a bad Jameis high volume game in this scenario.
Yeah, no, I think that's right. It's a highlight, and I'm trying to like think through kind of counter scenarios. It's just like Russell Wilson's really bad. They can't get anything going. The deep balls are not hitting, and the Browns' pressure is getting to them. But you're absolutely right to bring up the trading Za'Darius Smith and the inability to generate pressure. And the Saints have still been pretty bad at mitigating quick pressure, considering the state of their offensive line. And they're, I don't know, I think it's like 25% over the last 5-6 weeks. But I think it's kind of just like throwing your hands up and being like, could be a Jameis game. And that's not exactly the most compelling evidence to place a bet, I think.
So just to summarize, I'm on Wilson's over, Pickens over. Tomlin does feel like a coach who, if the weather's kind of gross, he's going to feed Najee. He's made comments to that kind of point in prior games when they've had bad weather. And I think it's a scenario where you could see him get a healthy dose of carries. So if you like his attempts over, yards over, I'm not going to argue that. And then I like, on the other side, Winston over 33.5 pass attempts. Just because I think, especially if the Steelers are hitting explosives, those are shorter drives, and you get the ball back to Winston quicker. So that's primarily what I'm on for tonight.
Yep, love those. Don't have any additional things to add there.
Sweet. Let's move on. New England Patriots at Miami Dolphins. Dolphins are 7.5-point favorites, 46.5-point total. You were on the Rams last week against New England. Kupp and Nacua both had very, very nice games against this Rams defense. You going back to the well with Miami here?
We're going to do the exact same thing. I think it was kind of startling to me that Christian Gonzalez did not shadow, did not. He's basically spent the entire time covering DeMarcus Robinson, allowing the Patriots cornerbacks who, Gonzalez himself, by our like separation counts, is, I think he was like 51st percentile entering that game. They don't have anyone above that. They're all below average. And what do you know, Cooper Kupp and Puka Nacua both go for over 100 yards when you're playing a very high rate of man coverage. The Patriots lead the NFL in man coverage rate. Or maybe they're like a percentage behind the Lions, but either way, it's above 50%, and that is just we've spoken about this a bunch. But in man coverage, it's really, this makes sense logically, but it's really a reflection of the talent on the field, of just like the better player is going to win out, and there's just such a huge matchup advantage for the Dolphins in having Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle go up against them. Below average cornerbacks in man coverage, and we've seen them put up some of their biggest games in man coverage too. Tagovailoa's EPA per play is 0.3 this year, one of the best in the NFL against man coverage. And what I think is particularly intriguing about this is the Dolphins have run a very different style offense this year. They have Tua Tagovailoa's got the highest screen rate. He's got one of the lowest ADOTs. They're not pushing the ball downfield like they have in the past. He's got one of the lowest deep attempt percentages. And they've had plenty of success, right? Like Dolphins offense with Tua, whether you want to look at advanced stats, whether you want to look at points scored, they're I think averaging close to 30 points a game. Their advanced numbers are suggesting they're just as good, so they can kind of win in that way. And also, it is I think only a matter of time before they start to get some of these deep passes in there. And New England is as stubborn as, putting Christian Gonzalez on DeMarcus Robinson. They're not going to waver from their scheme, or I shouldn't say they're not going to, but they're less likely than any other team. And Tyreek Hill is going to get some quick separation deep downfield if he's running routes against cornerbacks way worse than him. Same is true of Jalen Waddle. I think it's only a matter of time before these guys start to get their deep looks. And even not for the Miami passing game, they're still can put up some big numbers against the Patriots secondary. So I'm definitely on the Dolphins side. I've also been, I think, kind of leading the charge of the Drake May train, talking about him a lot, betting on him a lot. But I think it's a matter of understanding kind of the base rates. To me, the Dolphins are a like very low variance team in terms of their ability to score. They do it every week. There's nothing I think that the Patriots can do that is going to take Miami out of their offense. I think they're as good a bet as any to score 30 points or score a bunch of points. And even if they don't have to kind of push the pace a bit, to really play from ahead and lead by scoring sustainably on their drives. So on the other side of the ball, you're asking a lot of Drake May to keep up with them. And a lot needs to still go right for him to score. I mean, he was like he's playing hero ball effectively last week. And the team was like just barely getting to 22 points. And most of that was in garbage time. And you look at the strength of the Miami defense, and it's their pass rush has been great all season. And especially their like technically, I think it's like 10th in quick pressure rate, but there's a cluster of teams at like 24% quick pressure, where the gap between 5 and 11 is like less than a percent. For all intents and purposes, they are like in that cluster of really good quick pressure teams, where it's like a couple of pressures here, a couple of pressures there. So I don't, you don't want to use like top five, whatever, not the point. And the Patriots offensive line has been a complete disaster all season. They're allowing a ton of pressure, a ton of pressure, whatever metrics you want to use. And like Drake May is able to mitigate a lot of that. And that's why I think he's having so much more success than Jacoby Brissett. But when 30% of your plays are completely destroyed within 2.5 seconds, there's only so much you can do. And you're really asking a ton from Drake May. And there's a lot that still needs to go right for him to have success. And when I just look on the other side of the ball, the only thing I mean, like, maybe you can talk me out of how the Patriots are going to stop the Dolphins, but I just see this as like the lowest variance spot possible. It's the perfect matchup for them. And I think that, yes, 7's a lot in terms of kind of points separating teams, but in how this game plays out, I don't think it's so many points. This is a Dolphins spread play for me, and I'll be cooking up some SGPs. I haven't seen any pricing on this game yet, but I'm hoping that the market continues to sell on Hill and Waddle. I think it's only a matter of time, and a matchup against a man-heavy, stubborn New England defense, I think, is perhaps what the doctor ordered for these guys to break out.
Yeah, I'm just on FanDuel, just looking up real quick. It looks like Hill 64.5, Waddle 38.5. So that is pretty low. And like that's, it feels like it's inevitable that we get back to these Dolphins receivers catching 50-yard touchdown passes. We haven't really seen it all year. Last week, it was Jonnu Smith who had 100 yards and 2 touchdowns. And like, it feels like eventually it's going to hit. The thing that concerns me a little bit is this is a divisional game. The Patriots have had a lot of opportunity to look at this Dolphins offense. And we've seen them do, granted it was with Belichick there, but they did some different types of things against this Dolphins offense. I think it was the Sunday night game. They came out and they played kind of the college 3-deep safety thing for a little bit. Like they've done some unique things to try to take away what the Dolphins want to do. Jared Mayo's there. He was there when they were doing that, but he wasn't necessarily calling plays. So like, do we see some twists here? Like, I agree, if they come out and they just play straight man coverage, they're going to get burnt, and we saw that last week against the Rams. And I kind of tend to lean on the side of this is a very good spot for kind of the core Dolphins pieces. And on the point you had about the Dolphins pass rush, that's been in one of the more impressive units given what they've lost this season. Like, you lose Jalen Phillips, you lose Bradley Chubb, and you're still creating consistent pressure. You're still doing some interesting things on defense. So I tend to agree that this is a good spot for Dolphins -7, -7.5, whatever it is right now, 7.5. Any closing thoughts there for you?
No, it's just let's load up those Hill, Waddle, Tua, SGPs, Dolphins onslaught.
Let's do it. This next game, when I was looking early in the week at spreads, one of my favorite spreads of the week is Tampa Bay -5.5 at the New York Giants, 41.5 point total. Tampa's coming off a bye. It sounds like Mike Evans could have potentially played if he pushed it before the bye in week 10 against San Francisco. Seems very likely he's going to be back for this game against New York. That's important. Mike Evans, good football player. Getting him back on the offense is really helpful for Baker Mayfield, especially in a matchup where I think we've talked a little bit this season about the single high, two high splits for Evans. Typically, his production goes down when you get that safety help over the top, because he's a lot of his production comes on that vertical route tree and winning down the sideline against single coverage. The Giants are 5th in single high coverage rate this year. Their cornerback group hasn't been great. Deontay Banks has been benched multiple times this season for effort. Right? He's not making a ton of plays on the ball. And one quick note, I was looking at the Giants against vertical lead throws So we chart like pass types, horizontal lead, vertical lead, stick, which is kind of hitches and routes just coming back to the ball, over the shoulder throws. So if you look at vertical lead and over the shoulder, which is primarily where these big Mike Evans plays are coming from, leading him down the sideline. The Giants have allowed 138.9 pass rating on those throws, highest in the NFL. So there's a lot of matchup angles that point to Mike Evans potentially having a big game in his return. And then you pair that with the Giants have been really bad against the run all season, despite having one of the best interior defensive linemen in the NFL in Dexter Lawrence in the middle. They've given up, they're 31st in yards allowed per run play. They're bottom three in explosive run rate. And that's something that has been one of the biggest improvements for Tampa Bay this year, is their run game's good now. Like, it went from being bottom five in 2022, 2023, to they're second in yards per play, yards per run play, when you include penalty yardage, behind only the Ravens this year. So I think this is a good spot to kind of build Tampa Bay onslaught builds around Mike Evans, around Bucky Irving, around alt spreads, especially when you consider the fact that on the other side of the ball, they're switching to Tommy DeVito. And I know Tommy DeVito had his one shining moment on Monday Night Football against the Packers, but that's I don't think we're going to see that version of Tommy DeVito. The sacks are a major issue with him. He took 36 sacks on 97 pressured dropbacks. That is an absurd pressure to sack rate. No one in the NFL is getting close to that. And Todd Bowles is going to try to heat him up. Like, he's already one of the top blitzing defensive coordinators in the NFL, 47% this year, third highest in the league. I would imagine seeing Tommy DeVito on the other side of that offensive line, he's going to send a lot of pressure. And I think it's a scenario where you could see a really bad game from Tommy DeVito.
Yeah, so this is I'm with you on all fronts. This is the game I wrote up on PFF.com. It's kind of my favorite Tails play of the week, and it's a lot of the reasons you just mentioned. And the like pressure to sack rate for Tommy DeVito, I just want to like really highlight that, was 37% last year. The second closest was like 29%. Like, that is a massive, massive gap. His sack rate in obvious passing situations was 19%. Sack rate, not pressure to sack rate. He was getting sacked every fifth drop back in an obvious passing situation, defined as a play that has a more than 70% chance to be a pass relative to the game situation. So when you think about the fact that the Bucs defense also, since Vita Vea came back, has been a top 10 run defense unit by basically any metric you wanna use. If you think about it from that perspective of like the Giants are probably going to be in some very obvious passing downs even early in the game, enter DeVito sacks against the Tampa Bay pass rush, which also has been coming alive as of late. Their secondary is terrible, but the pass rush has been generating pressure. This is what happens in a Todd Bowles defense when you're blitzing as often as they do. So in neutral settings, you have DeVito sack problems just from third downs. And then like once you get down in the game and the pass rushers can start to tee off, I think this one can get really ugly. And the only other point I'll mention here is that Tampa Bay has been terrific at mitigating quick pressure. I think this is like a function of they're getting rid of the ball very quick. They're like basically tied with the Packers. The Packers have been doing this for a couple of years now, with the lowest quick pressure allowed rate in the NFL. And the Giants have the biggest gap. The difference between the Giants' EPA on defense when they get quick pressure versus they don't have quick pressure is nearly 1.12 points difference. They're by far the worst defense in the NFL when they don't get quick pressure. They are extremely reliant on basically Dexter Lawrence to blow up the play for the defense to have any success, and Tampa Bay is built to stop that. And then all the points you mentioned, and this is a team that I think should be able to run the ball extremely well, and Tampa Bay I think should be able to score. And Tommy DeVito is a really bad quarterback. I love Tommy Cutlets. I think it's a great nickname. It's a great shtick. You love to be in New York when Tommy DeVito is going, but he's not a great NFL quarterback, and the Giants know that. And this is not a spot, I think, for him to have success. And I think this one can get real ugly.
Yeah, I mean, their path is leaning on the run game, but I Like, I don't think they're going to be able to. Do you remember that? I think it was last year, that game against the Jets where Saquon had like 38 carries and they were running in like even third and longs. Like, that's, I feel like that's what you have to do, but they're not going to be able to do that in this matchup. Cool. So I think we both hit what we like. We're all over Tampa Bay. Specifically for me, Mike Evans, Bucky Irving, Baker Mayfield. Don't hate throwing him in there either. The next game we want to talk about is kind of the best game of the afternoon slate, or the most intriguing game of the afternoon slate. San Francisco 49ers at Green Bay Packers. Green Bay's 2.5-point favorites at home, 47.5-point total. And, man, San Francisco needs a win here. This NFC West has gone tight. San Francisco has been skidding. They're losing late leads. What do you – I think I want to hit the Green Bay offense side, so I'm interested to hear what you have to say on the San Francisco offense side.
Yeah, so Green Bay has been – I guess it's kind of a combo of Green Bay defense, San Francisco offense. Green Bay has really increased their single coverage rate the last bunch of weeks, which I think is pretty interesting considering it's coincided with Jair Alexander missing some time. And he tried – he was questionable with a knee injury coming into the game. He played in a couple of sets last week, left the game. I'm expecting him to miss. And I think that injuries, I should say, are like a huge part of this game. I think Nick Bosa's going to miss. George Kittle said he's going to play. I'm assuming he's in there. But this is a Green Bay defense that I think kind of is a lot worse than some of their underlying production metrics. They were generating a ton of high leverage interceptions early in the season, and they're kind of like EPA numbers were inflated as a result of that. And over the last 3 weeks, they've been way well below average. The Jaguars had their best game of the year against them. Chicago had one of their best games. The defensive results have been really bad, and their pressure also has taken a huge hit in recent weeks. They're have really done a poor job at generating pressure, in addition to playing a lot of single coverage and not winning those matchups. And you're going up in a very similar way to what we talked about with Miami and New England. San Francisco's got a lot of weapons to beat you. Juwan Jennings, we've been talking about Juwan Jennings for weeks. It's, you know, as I said in a write-up last week, it's just death taxes and Juwan Jennings until the market catches up. Like, this is a guy who entered last week seventh in the league in yards per route run, despite being a third wide receiver. And like, now he's just firmly in that Brandon Ayuk role and has been carving out defenses. I would note that the run game for San Francisco on on off splits generally pretty noisy. Massive difference depending on if George Kittle's in the game or not. Getting him back, I think, is going to be absolutely enormous. And like, we've seen this San Francisco rushing attack over the last bunch of years be basically matchup agnostic. They can win in any way. I'm not concerned about the Packers run defense, which has been one of their better units for the season. I just see this as a spot where the Green Bay defense is a little bit mispriced because of some of the early season production that I think is relatively fluky. And the Niners have had a lot of their trouble kind of in the red zone. Christian McCaffrey had that crazy streak last year where he scored a touchdown in whatever it was, like 13, 14 straight games. He's got none through two this season. I'm going to believe the sample size of last year. The cast of characters is effectively the same. I don't think anything drastic changed. If anything, Brock Purdy is playing way better than he has in the past. I think this is a Niners offense. The underlying numbers look great. I don't want to be kind of distracted from the results of the game. They've been in a lot of fluky games. They're a great team. They're desperate to win this game. I think their guys are going to try and give it a go, and this is an offense, I think, that's going to have success. The question is on the other side of the ball, whether Green Bay can keep up, and they've been an incredible offense. But certainly on just the narrow San Francisco offense side, it's a Green Bay defense that has really been bad over the last month or so, and a Niners team that hasn't been putting up points. But the underlying numbers look just as good, and we should believe the sample of the previous seasons with largely the same cast of characters as the one that's a little bit more predictive going forward than what we've seen so far.
Yeah, I think it is largely the same cast of characters. San Francisco, just in both offensively and defensively, I think there's been losses around the edges, like just deteriorations on both sides of the ball. Like, yes, you still have Jennings, you still have Kittle, you still have Samuel, you still have McCaffrey. Whether or not McCaffrey is the same guy we saw last year, that's still up in the air. Like, he might be. It looks, at least in the two games since he's come back, that he's missing a little bit of that explosiveness. And then you replace Ayuk with Pearsall, who I think Pearsall's a good player, but still, compared to what we saw from Ayuk last year, that is a loss. And then on the defensive side, the big injury in this game is Nick Bosa. He's pretty much the only high-end pass rusher on this San Francisco defense. And this is a defense that doesn't blitz. They're 31st in blitz rate. That's something that's given Jordan Love problems all year long. The Packers, in terms of blitz rate faced, are third in the NFL, and Love is 31st in PFF passing grade, ahead of only Will Levis and Deshaun Watson against the blitz. It's been an issue. Probably not going to see it against San Francisco, but that means that their front four is going to have to get pressure. And Bosa, the quote that I read was Bosa expressed concern after the game that he might need to miss some time after injuring his hip and oblique on both sides of the body the past 2 weeks. So it feels somewhat likely that he's not going to play in this game. So you're losing that pass rush. And like you said in the last segment with the Bucks, the Packers don't allow quick pressure. So I think you're going to get clean pockets for Jordan Love to work from, which is a scenario where it against the San Francisco defense, it hasn't been as good as what we've seen in prior years on the back end either. They're allowing the highest conversion rate in the NFL on third and longs. So when you get into more of these obvious passing situations, they haven't been able to get off the field when the ball is in their court. They run a lot of quarters. Green Bay's top five in the NFL in EPA per play against quarters. Like, I think there's a lot of things that point to this idea that Green Bay is going to be able to move the ball. And if you're saying San Francisco, you have faith in them being able to move the ball, which I tend to agree with, despite some of the losses that I talked about. I think the joint conclusion here is over 47.5.
Yeah, that's probably true.
So on my end, I'm on Jordan Love passing overs. I'm on Jaden Reed receiving overs. When you get zone coverage specifically, which I think you're going to see a lot of from San Francisco, Reed tends to be the guy who hits those big plays. You saw Christian Watson go off last week. There's always this case with the Packers receivers where any given week one of them could go off, so it's kind of hard to pick the one, but I think Reed is my favorite in this matchup. And then on the other side, because they've had some difficulty getting McCaffrey going in the run game, I think this could be a game where they try to get him going through the air a little bit. And you saw in the playoff game last year, didn't have a ton of success in terms of yards. He only had 30 receiving yards, but he had 12 targets in that divisional round game against the Packers. So, like, if they're just trying to get him into the game, get him some opportunities in space, I kind of like his over receptions stuff as well as a bring back.
Yeah. No, I like that. The over, I think, is true. There's one comment I was going to make. You're talking about, like, the Niners have struggled in kind of these obvious passing situations on these third and longs. Like, that's bound to regress, right? Like, the defense has, and maybe it's not this week, and the Packers have been one of the best offenses in football, but it's one thing to have that if you're the Carolina Panthers, right? They're just a bad defense overall. Like, the Niners have been pretty good still by most other metrics. Like, they're top 10. They're not a top 10 defense, I think, if Nick Bosa is not playing. But, like, that, them being 32nd is, like, this is how you end up with some, like, really fluky results, which you have a lot of high leverage plays that are not going your way. But there's nothing underlying which suggests that, like, that should sustain itself. If anything, we, like, should say, no, the larger sample of a Niners team, which, like, is good in other passing situations, is kind of the more relevant one. Though, like, it does do a very good job, I think, descriptively talking about the struggles of the Niners defense and a lot of the results, especially late in games, right? A lot of these situations are happening on third and tens, fourth and tens even, in late spots in the fourth quarter that they've struggled with. But yeah, I'm on the over. I think the Packers should be able to move the ball. That's not really the problem. It's more for me a matter of, like, San Francisco, I think, can can match them and has a higher likelihood of success, and like are the underdogs in this spot. Should lead with that, of like it's all relative to what the market's pricing in. And even just one last thing I'll say before we conclude our bets is like the frame of mind I'd want to have here is like, what would we think of this game 5 weeks ago, 6 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago? The Niners are favored. And the question is like, how much have we learned about each of these teams? And is that enough to have moved as much as we have? And I think the Packers defense is like a massive mover in that. And it's not a particularly great unit right now. And I think the Niners offense is going to be fine. And even there are some data points on the defensive side. So to recap, you've talked me into the over. That is a side I should be on. And I'll also be on some Niners alts, maybe even some Green Bay alts. And then we can cook with some SGPs here. A lot of different options of players who have some high ceilings, and trying to kind of narrow in on which guy for the Packers is a little bit difficult. But I think I'll be getting right back to that Niners strain of McCaffrey, Kittle, and Juwan Jennings, maybe even some Debo Samuel.
Yeah, no, a lot of different SGP angles here. I don't know if I'm going to bet it, but I think I'm a little bit on the opposite side. I would lean Green Bay -2.5. But like, I think both offenses score. I like the over better than I like any sort of spread or money line bet. Okay, we'll close things out with the Philadelphia Eagles at the Los Angeles Rams. Sunday Night Football. Eagles are 2.5-point favorites on the road, 48.5-point total. What do you like in this spot?
Yeah, I think this is just, I mean, first of all, I'll just say like the Eagles are at house right now. They've been dominant. They're probably the closest thing to the NFL's most complete team in terms of production. With all that said, I think there's a sneaky case for the Rams here. And this is an Eagles team which is winning in a very, very different way than they have in previous seasons. They were kind of a balanced team in the past. Their past 2 years of success, they relied on Hurts a lot. They're an extreme run-heavy team right now. One of the highest rates of kind of runs adjusted for expectation, that the game state that we talk about all the time. Obviously, you're a lot more likely to run when you're up 14-0 in the fourth quarter than if you're down 14-0 in the fourth quarter. So adjusting for that, they've been one of the highest in the NFL. And they've also relied extremely heavily on explosive plays, which is an interesting combo, because usually you have teams that are extremely run heavy as like a success rate style team, where you kind of like chug along first downs one at a time. But the Eagles have built an explosive passing game on top of the run game, and also Saquon Barkley himself has just been terrific at that. They're 40% like explosive drive, which is a drive with a play of 20 or more yards, and close to half their drives, and you're at rate of drive success at that point skyrockets when you have an explosive play naturally. And even more so this year, considering the average field position. But the Rams' run defense has been great over the last 6 weeks or so. They are second best in the NFL since week six with a 30.5 rush success rate allowed. They're not far behind in EPA. I think they're fourth best in that span. And I think that kind of, I mean, look, can the Eagles win this matchup? Of course. Is there also a path for the Rams to slow them down on the ground? And Jalen Hurts has a real problem with pressure right now. I don't know if this was just like a function of Mailata being out, and it's really a symptom of that, that we have seen this tendency in the past of he leads the NFL in like call quarterback-induced pressures, which is at PFF we chart when pressure kind of disrupts a play from ever developing. And then if we take the pressures that happen after a play already develops, those are the types of plays that a quarterback takes on himself effectively, because he had time to make a decision to get it out to one of his reads or to throw the ball away or whatever that might be. And Hurts leads the NFL in that category. And also when you do get these disruption pressures, he's been the worst in the NFL by EPA per play. Now, getting your tackles back and healthy matters a lot here. But you've also got a matchup with Jared Verse and a Rams defense, which has been winning against even some tough offensive lines. And Jared Verse has been, he still lead the NFL in pressures right now. The guy's been insane. And that's also a case for the Eagles to slow down a bit. And when you combine these two things of, like, say they can't get Barkley going on the ground, they're probably going to continually give it to him. And then you have Hurts in a lot of these kind of obvious passing situations where he's pretty vulnerable, and they're not as dominant as kind of like the Bills offense right now, the Ravens offense right now. Obviously, you're going to have bad games. You're going to, like, that happens in the NFL. But I think they are much more fragile than kind of your typical elite offense just by the way they're constructed, because they're relying a lot on explosive runs. And if you don't get one or two of those, then you've kind of just given Barkley 20 carries for 80 yards, three, four, like, or even less than that. And there's not a lot of passing volume to go around. And Hurts has a lot of negative plays in addition to the big ones. You can kind of get over that if you're generating explosives, but it's kind of a case that's mitigated. I'll just talk quickly on the other side of the ball. It's a real matter. Like, the Eagles defense, if there's been a unit that's been better on against the run, it's the Eagles. They've also been great against the pass. Our numbers, Quinyon Mitchell's getting a lot of love. Our numbers are not giving him as much credit, I think, as kind of the media is right now. He's actually below average in his ability to prevent separation. Has not been that great at the catch point by our numbers. Perhaps that's going to regress. Perhaps we will catch up to kind of what a lot of the people in the media and certainly in Philadelphia are telling us. But this is a Rams offense that we talked about a couple of weeks ago, that with Kupp, Nacua, Williams, and Stafford has been the best offense in the NFL. And they can win that matchup even against a tough Philadelphia defense. Is it likely? I wouldn't say it's likely. Is it possible? Absolutely. And when you kind of look at how these two teams are priced relative to each other, accounting for home field, it's about a 4-point difference on a neutral field. The Eagles are fragile. That isn't to say, if you kind of play out what's most likely to happen, the Eagles aren't going to win. They are. But when you think about the tails and you think about, like, different ways this game can play out, I think there's a real case for the Rams offense to mitigate the Eagles defense, to play at that rate of, like, 7 yards per play, which is way better than the next best offense, and also for them to stop the run, not allow Barkley to go for any explosives, and start to generate some pressure on Hurts in these obvious passing situations. That is a real tale that I'll be on. And there's no in betting, there's no love for contrarian angles. And unfortunately, this game is Sunday at 8:20, so we cannot include it on the DFS main slate. But that is the sort of logic I'm employing going on some Rams. And to recap on the actual bets, I'll probably be betting on some Ram alts. And I will also be betting on some, perhaps some Barkley unders, as well as some SGPs, kind of combining Rams passing with some Eagles unders.
It's a really interesting matchup, and I think the part you hit on second, the Rams offense against the Eagles defense, that plays into the other side of the ball too, because the Rams are able to score. The Eagles are one of these teams who's going to stick with the run game longer than pretty much any other team in the NFL, but if the Rams build a lead, right, that takes the Eagles out of that. And Hurts in obvious passing situations, it's not good. It hasn't been good for a while. The pressure stuff is real. It's not just related to the Mailata injury. Like, this goes back to last year, to prior years. And when things are good, when they're running the ball well, when Hurts has clean pockets to work from, and he's able to get the ball out to A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith, he looks like one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL. It's when you take him out of those situations that things start to fall apart. So really, a lot of this comes down to, can the Rams stop the run? Can the Rams put up points and kind of take the Eagles out of what they want to do on offense? Because if you don't take the Eagles out of what they want to do on offense, they are arguably the best team in the NFL. They're like you were talking about, they're one of the best teams in the league when they play the way that they want to play. And it's easier said than done to just say stop the run when you have that offensive line, when you have Saquon Barkley playing the way he's playing right now. It's not an easy thing to take away, for sure. I know I said finish up with that, but want to get quick thoughts on Monday Night Football because it is a good matchup. We got the Harbaugh this week, John Harbaugh versus Jim Harbaugh, first time since the Super Bowl. And I guess my initial thoughts on this game is I think there's angles for both these offenses to have success. The Chargers defense in particular has played well all season. And I know Chargers fans don't want to hear it, and we've talked about it before. The opposing slate of offenses and quarterbacks that they've played has not been great. Right? They've played, if you look at EPA per play, they've played three offenses in the top half of the league so far. The Chiefs in week four, who they held to pretty low offensive output. Granted, that was the game that Rashee Rice got hurt in the first half. That kind of throws your game plan out the window, especially when you don't have time to plan. They played Arizona in week seven. Again, did a good job against Arizona in general. And then they played the Bengals last week. And good first half, but then the Bengals were able to stack points in a hurry in the second half, get some explosive plays to T. Higgins in the passing game. And like all that said, none of those three offenses are playing as well as the Ravens offense is playing right now. Lamar Jackson is our number one graded quarterback. The Ravens are first in EPA per play, coming off a bad game against Pittsburgh. I'm sure that they're looking to kind of put that behind them in this spot. And stylistically, like, the Steelers play with heavier boxes. They blitz. They play single high. The Chargers are kind of the exact opposite. They play with light boxes. They play with two high safeties. It's going to be difficult for them to stop the run game in that structure. And Lamar Jackson has been so good for multiple years attacking the middle of the field. And I think when you get those two high safety structures, you have a little bit more room in that intermediate range of the field to do that. So I think stylistically it sets up for a nice Ravens bounce back spot. And then on the other side, Herbert's launching it again. That we got away from that, and I know we talked about the pass rate stuff. Pass rate over expected way up since the bye week, but also his average depth of target is the highest it's ever been in his career this season. He leads the NFL or is tied for the league lead in completions, yards, touchdowns on throws 20-plus yards downfield. And the Ravens, that's been one of their weak points on defense, is giving up those big downfield passes. Marcus Williams got benched multiple times this season, or in the last 4 weeks he's been benched two games. They do have some elite players on the back end. Marlon Humphrey is arguably playing like the best cornerback in the NFL right now. Kyle Hamilton, arguably the best safety in the NFL. But it's these weak points, that other safety spot, when it's not Ardarius Washington. Brandon Stevens isn't really playing great. Nate Wiggins isn't really playing great. So it's these other spots that teams are picking on, and they're still getting enough of this downfield production. So I think it's a situation where there's avenues to success for both teams.
Yeah, no, I'm with you there. I think this is the Ravens team is a house, and even though the Chargers have been good on defense, they should be able to score. The only other point I'll make is that the Ravens have really struggled to generate much of a pass rush. And Justin Herbert's been our best quarterback. He's got a 93.6 grade, kept clean. He's throwing for 8.5 yards per attempt. And to your point about Justin Herbert throwing deep, he's got a 7% big time throw rate on plays. He's kept clean, and there's no one even close to him behind that. You've got like Russell Wilson in his small sample at 5.6, and then Josh Allen at 5%. Like, Herbert is just making some incredible throws in the situation. And like you talked about, it kind of really plays into where the Ravens are weak, which is that Herbert gets particularly aggressive when he's kept clean, and the Ravens struggle to defend the explosives. So I think that kind of sets up very well for him to have some success. The total's already pretty high, but that doesn't mean the props that are kind of under that are going to be as high. I'm very curious to see, and I haven't seen yet, where Herbert's going to open. How much of the sample are they building in from early season where he's throwing for 130 yards per game? I have been betting is over basically consistently every week. I think that perhaps this is a spot where the markets catch up, but if not, I'll be right back on that train. This is a spot which really sets up well for the Chargers. Sets up well for the Ravens. At the very least, should be an extremely fun Monday Night Football game.
Yeah, the It's the primer before the Thanksgiving Tommy DeVito Cooper Rush game. So got to get our good football where we can.
I will never. I will always be happy for any football. We get a Cooper Rush Tommy DeVito game. I love it. In May, I'm going to be begging for a Cooper Rush Tommy DeVito game.
Yeah, no, it's any football is better than no football. And Thanksgiving football, regardless of the matchup, the kind of three island games, always one of the better football days of the year. So
100%, can't complain. 100%.
That's all we got this week. For Judah Fort Gang, thank you everyone for listening, and we'll be back with some Week 13 talk next week.